We're back. We're back with Uga from APR3. Good to have you, sir. We're back with Uga from APR3. Good to have you, sir. Brief intro into what it is that you do at APR3. Yeah, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for hosting me. Sure, let's get started off what I do, I guess, at APR3 in my day-to-day, and then what the project is all about. So you can, I guess, give me the name head of strategy. I'm more so involved in every single aspect of the project, may it be what we do marketing-wise or also technical-wise, doing a lot of talks such as this one, or essentially at conferences representing what we've been building at APR3. And I hand it to you how you want to progress here.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I mean, I think, you know, like one of the, you know, the interesting things about the space is, you know, pricing, oracles, communication, you know, the picks and shovels of what, you know, DeFi is all about. And that's essentially what you guys are doing at the moment. Great name, by the way, APR3, obviously, you know, oracles, APIs, Web3, great synergy between all of those. So what does APR3 do in its simple terms so that, you know, anyone can understand?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, we're an Oracle project, and a lot of you probably know oracles are mostly currently used in DeFi for things such as price feeds. Why do you need that to begin with? You can imagine blockchains as isolated systems. Yes, you can transact on them, but they cannot transact out, if that makes sense. So if you want to know what the price of a certain asset is, somebody needs to bring that in for you. And there are a lot of various different systems that essentially do that. And what we focused on is building what we call first-party oracles. That is essentially a term that means that the oracles that bring data in are actually the data sources themselves. What that means in practice is that if you consume data, it comes from CoinGecko directly, instead of me claiming I get it from CoinGecko and bringing it on-chain, which would essentially be a third-party oracle. And what we then do is we get these data sources to run oracles, and then we aggregate their answers. So we can verifiably prove who brings you the data, and also do it essentially in the most efficient way possible without having a lot of intermediaries in the middle. Because once you introduce intermediaries into the middle, you now create another layer that you need to secure. Like, how do you prevent me from lying? You need to introduce things like staking, or you need a centralized entity governing the people in the middle. And we want to essentially get rid of all of those inefficiencies and just make the data source run the oracle directly.
Okay, so you essentially, so what APR3 is doing is you're eliminating the opportunity for a middleman or for a middleman itself to participate in the process. Is that currently like a major issue? I mean, obviously, oracles like Chainlink are doing that with the middlemen in between. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you look at something like Chainlink, if there are 31 nodes in the middle, one core issue that that these third-party nodes generate is what is actually used under the hood. Like, how many APIs are actually under a network of 31 third-party nodes? And you literally cannot prove that today. It could all be CoinGecko, and you don't know. It's just claimed to be 31 intermediaries, but not where those 31 intermediaries actually get their data from. In the worst case scenario, and that is what you should assume in the blockchain always, it is one, and nobody can prove that it isn't. And that is the core reason why we go to the data sources and make them run the node, because if you then have 7, 9, 12, we can actually verifiably prove to you that there are at least so many data sources behind it. And another core issue that essentially third-party networks create for you is you still need to pay the data sources. So even if you have as many data sources as, for instance, we have, you have now, let's assume, 30, 50 nodes in the middle that also have to make money to provide your service. And what that means is that this entire construct is more expensive to run, more expensive to secure, a lot more mouths to feed, more inefficient, a lot more players that can essentially screw around. And at the end of the day, and that is the worst of all of this, is even if you secure the middle layer, this intermediary layer, and have staking and whatever, the data sources behind it can still bond together and destroy the entire construct. Like, if all of the, let's say, 10 sources that you have behind it, let's assume you have $1 billion staking mechanism in the middle. The 10 people that are outside of this that are providing you data can still bring all of this down in with no problems at all, essentially. So this middle layer, where a lot of projects are putting a lot of effort into, we want to get rid of entirely, because all of the power lies with the data sources, and we need to align those and make sure that those don't misbehave, instead of securing this middle layer in any capacity.
So, I mean, you've obviously illustrated like where things can go wrong. I mean, is there a case or cases that we've seen where that has happened, where we've had bad actors manipulate data that we're aware of?
I mean, there, if you look at the Oracle space, there has been a lot of misreports and a lot of things that essentially can go wrong. And a lot of the times when things happen, you cannot really pinpoint if it was a specific source acting up, because most of the times it's intransparent. You cannot really prove that. So there's a mispricing happening. There was recently one on Arbitrum, I think 3 months ago, where I think it was wrapped staked ETH, spiked from like 1.1 to 1.7. And it was said that some sources have misreported, but not really who and not really why, and not really, okay, how many are you using and which pools are they securing? So there's a lot of essentially ambiguity in that process in itself, which we try to remove. Like first party oracles, you don't need to ask these questions. The answer, who has misreported, will be on chain and everybody can check. Oh, it was CoinGecko. Thanks. Can we create a data feed without CoinGecko for this specific asset? Because they don't seem to have their stuff together, for instance.
So tell me, in terms of the problem that currently exists with oracles obviously relying on third parties, right? Is that something that can be rectified by, say, the Chainlink and whoever else is offering oracles? Or is it a legacy issue where they cannot do that based on the infrastructure that they have at the moment? Is it an infrastructure problem that they might have that you guys have obviously circumvented with the way that you've built your infrastructure? Or is it something that they can do overnight themselves?
Yeah, essentially, it is an infrastructure problem that they can still solve theoretically. So just to give a little bit of background, our founders were operating Chainlink nodes back in the day. So they started in the Chainlink ecosystem, and they essentially wanted to bring as many APIs, as many providers on board as possible. And during that process, they realized what is holding these people back from just running their own Chainlink nodes, because theoretically, they can do that. And there's a bunch of things, like the typical API, like the typical data business, they don't want to run blockchain nodes. They don't want to buy crypto to pay for gas. They don't want to do a lot of these things that now it eases up a bit in the last like 3 years since we're essentially live. But like a lot of entities that just simply provide data, maybe sports data, weather, flight, they don't want to deal with blockchain. They don't want to deal with crypto. They don't want to deal with buying crypto and making sure they have enough gas to supply essentially data. And then what you end up doing is they sell you API access, and then you have people that want to deal with the headache of the blockchain in the middle. And that's how you end up with the network that is mostly third party. Whereas our approach was, how can we break this down enough for the data sources to run this directly? So we eliminated a lot of the things. So we had created a system where they don't have to touch crypto. They have a wallet attached to their oracle that can be topped up by anyone, like the project themselves, by us. So essentially all of this is already obfuscated away. They don't just need to run a node. And in theory, Chainlink or any other oracle project, they can still do a lot of things, but they essentially need to convince the other party to touch crypto more so than we do. And that is one of the core things we focused on. So it's essentially similar to their Web2 business that they already run, whereas every other Oracle project currently tries to convince people to make the jump into Web3 fully. Whereas, let's just say we are building baby steps for them on the way.
I think that's a great strategy. I mean, I think that's probably been one of the biggest barriers to entry is that, you know, you get really good tech and you get kind of like the Web2 mindset interested in the tech. And then Web3 says, well, buy a token or do this or do that. And then it's kind of like, well, I want to use your tech, but I don't want to buy your token because I don't really see the point of it. And it's kind of like they come hand in hand. And that's, you know, is there kind of like an obligation that people need to buy your token in order to participate in your technology? Or is it kind of like, are the two mutually exclusive?
It's mutually exclusive. You don't need API 3 in any sense to essentially participate here. And just to go back to like what we realized these issues as well, like while we were operating it. First of all, it's not only that these people might have to buy their tokens, but a lot of projects, and this is also like chains that get other businesses to run validators. Oftentimes, people get these tokens for free just to participate in the network. But even then, it is not accepted because it comes with legal issues, tax issues, and all other sorts of things that these businesses just don't want to deal with. Like, it's not like they have somebody sitting there that is a crypto legal slash tax expert and they can just take these tokens. It takes really sophisticated players, larger companies, and then they have like a sub team maybe that is specialized in this, and then they can run this. But as you might notice, like, this is restricting a lot of the businesses that you can partner with. And most definitely, can you not bring any typical data provider on chain? Because most often these people are like 5 to 20 people teams that specialize in a certain niche where they provide data, and they don't have a full like man over that can just dive into crypto and run all of this and deal with all of this.
So, I mean, it's an interesting one because like from a personal perspective, I mean, this is kind of like, you know, you're obviously working in Web3 and you're interacting, you know, obviously on quite a sophisticated level technically. But how do you now take that value proposition that is crypto and then approach institutions that are kind of interested in crypto and they're interested in the infrastructure? Is there a different approach that you've got to take when you're dealing from a strategy perspective? Or is it kind of like, well, this is what we do, this is how it all ties together? I mean, how do you bridge the divide between, say, Web3 and kind of like that Web2 mindset in terms of what you guys are doing at the moment?
So essentially, I believe, first of all, you need to abstract away the entire issue so it feels like they're running a Web2 business. And after that, you can essentially introduce a lot more steps to make them comfortable with it. For instance, a lot of our providers are still getting paid in crypto. It was more of an introduction into the service, but how we did that, for instance, was we went to Circle. We went step for step how they create a business account, how they get an address. And the first iteration of this was you send USDC there, and with a Circle account, you can create instant wires. So they don't even know that they just got USDC onto their crypto address. The only thing that happened for them is they got wired money. And then suddenly they realize, oh, cool, like it goes into this address, and theoretically I can now do more things with that. And that turned into some other partnerships where they also got some API 3 here and there for other services. And that's how you slowly get them involved. This is obviously still not, they're running a full node, they're going on a decentralized exchange and topping up their wallet with gas or whatever. But it is more than these people were willing to do at the beginning, and especially more than just slapping onto their faces that you need to go onto this exchange, buy ETH, withdraw it to this wallet, and you need a reminder that once a day you check that wallet, it can't run too low, and all of these things. Like, they're getting there, just like the entire industry is getting there, but yeah, they need time and hand-holding, a lot of hand-holding.
So, I mean, is there kind of like that epiphany within the space where you are dealing with a traditional kind of like Web2 company where they realize, hold on a second, like, you know, this is taking a lot quicker in terms of doing transfers. It's way, are they actually recognizing the efficiency of what it is that you guys are doing, firstly? And secondly, do they appreciate the efficiency that essentially this infrastructure that is blockchain is ultimately bringing to their convenience?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, a lot of them learn about how quick it is to send money around. Like, that is the one major use case, I guess, stable coins. Everyone's like, oh, so it's instantly there. But what a lot more happens is that a lot of them didn't know that blockchains needed data, and they all just realized that this is another market I can sell into. Like, this wasn't a known data arc for them. Like, they concentrated on a lot of different things, but they were not aware that selling financial data to the blockchain is a niche. And we had a lot of companies that we approached then suddenly have one or two people, after realizing this and realizing how easy it is, specialize in this, make sure that we're involved in this, make sure that we're one of the top providers, make sure that we flow with this, because they also see the just sheer financial potential behind this, seeing the numbers that float around every day. And oracles do secure a lot of market value. And when I guess we later come to the business proposition of running all of this, they want to be at the forefront of this to potentially maximize, obviously, also their business opportunity.
So, I mean, in terms of the client set that you guys are looking at the moment, I know that you are on how many blockchains at the moment that you're operating on?
16, but it's going to change quite significantly in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, and obviously we get to see, you know, all these blockchains that are coming in at the moment, and clearly you guys have got, you know, market exposure. It's not just, well, we've got this idea that, you know, we want to do this and, you know, we're servicing the furniture store down the road. I mean, you guys are delivering on what it is that you're saying. You are solving the middleman problem. I want to just kind of get into the technical side of things. Can you explain to us how, on the API side of things, if I approach you as a business, how do you integrate me into a service? So, for example, if I'm wanting to do a payment, I'm a payment gateway of sorts. I obviously want to utilize the efficiency of blockchain, immediate transfers and payments. How would that integration look like, you know, in simple terms?
Yeah, I would say there are like two different ways of how you can get integrated. First of all, we offer the typical data feed service where we aggregate a lot of providers and serve you, for instance, price feeds like BTC, USD on a specific chain. And how you get integrated there is mostly we get in contact with you, we test your API vigorously, and then we build, so to speak, sets of data providers, 9 behind them, 11 behind a certain data feed. And your data feed, like your API, is constantly, like literally every second, being called on the monitoring. And we have dedicated teams checking the responses of every single person. You have fancy graphs in front of you with like 50 providers and how they respond to each other. And alerts get automatically sent out if you happen to like have some spikes in it, or so, like you're in constant touch with us. But opposed to that, we also have something called Chain API. That is a platform that allows you to integrate your own API without ever interacting with us. So that platform essentially takes your API specifications, translates them into blockchain speak, so to speak, and then you can decide which blockchains you want to serve. And that is running over a protocol called request response. So what then happens is you have something running in your cloud, which is called Erno. It is configured with your API. And on each chain, there's a specific contract that this Erno is listening to. And when calls are made to it, that Erno is answering. So once your API is done, let's say you set a payment API, right? Let's say you want to essentially create a payment. So you make a call on chain that goes to the air node and that triggers something in the API in the backend, and then it answers you. Like, that is how it would work. And we're in no way, shape or form in the middle of this. We just have created a website that allows you to oracleize this. I just wanted to present it in like two different products, because one is an aggregated DeFi product and one is a self-service platform that allows you to integrate any API however you want.
So, I mean, I wanted to actually also just look at, you know, the different products that you guys are offering at the moment. It's not just a one-trick pony. There's a whole lot of different approaches that you guys have. You have kind of like the developer approach to that. Then you obviously have the client approach to that as well, where you're obviously encouraging developers to come in and to utilize the services that you guys have got to offer. Is that, obviously that's important. I mean, how do you guys go about essentially promoting that within the developer circles? Is that something that you involved with on a DAO level, where you guys approaching, you know, whether it's the Arbitrum Foundation, whether it is Avalanche, Ava Labs? I mean, how does that kind of like get delivered? Is that like, well, listen, we have documentation, these are the suite of products, and then you approach developers from that perspective? How does that work?
So when it comes to actually reaching projects and making them utilize this, it depends on the project itself. So we oftentimes people want randomness and things like that. So we have a service for that, and we participate in hackathons. We're in their Discords and so on. And when it comes to prize feeds, for instance, we oftentimes are in direct contact with the foundation or the company behind the chain, and they most of the times give out grants to sponsor these. I think one thing I have to clarify here, why you need sponsorship in any capacity to run prize feeds. Prize feeds across every Oracle project are a losing business model. Prize feeds alone make no money. This is probably news to a lot of people, but any project that offers you prizes, they literally make $0 with it. So it doesn't matter if you offer these prize feeds more efficiently or if you like, zero stays zero. So we have been building towards other means to generate money and to create essentially value proposition for our customers. But just to clarify again, when it comes to simple prize feeds, we want people to use them everywhere. And we have released sort of our aggregated version like roughly half a year ago. And since then, prices the things we secure have been steadily grinding up. But the major thing we were focused on is something called OEV. I'm pretty sure we'll dive into that later. And creating something more than simply providing prices. Because the unfortunate truth is everyone can provide prices, and everyone can create a token to sell to subsidize providing prices. But there's like no business mechanic how the benefit is actually returned to you as a project so far. Everyone is just subsidizing this or running at break even. And I have yet to see projects making money, Oracle projects making money out of price feeds.
So, I mean, what is your, then ultimately, what is your business model based from a profit perspective? I mean, I have to ask that question.
Yeah. So our business model is currently built upon OEV, which stands for Oracle Extractable Value. You probably heard the term MEV before.
Yes.
Where like the most common version, something like a sandwich attack, where you want to buy something on a decentralized exchange, somebody buys before you and after you, extracting the value in between, which is typically your slippage or whatnot. Oracles currently update very blindly of what they enable. Like, for instance, if you update the ETHUSD price feed, it could trigger liquidations on a lending platform. But oracles are not really aware of that or looking at the potential that they create. And a liquidation, there's often value tied to it because there's an incentive to liquidate the being paid out to liquidate. So the lending protocol maintains health. So oracles typically update blindly currently. And then there is a race to liquidate this position that was just enabled by the Oracle update, and most of the value ends up elsewhere. So like somebody wants to liquidate and they then pay a lot in what we call order flow auctions to block producers to be the first in order to liquidate someone. But this is only possible because the Oracle updates blindly. Theoretically, the Oracle could update whenever it is most profitable for them and back all of the profits that come with that. But this creates another problem of centralization, when the Oracle essentially just moves itself in front every time and the project takes all of the money. You're still, at some point, other people are going to stop looking because they assume it's always going to be the Oracle project because they're in such a privileged position to make use of this. So to get to the gist of this, what we do is we have something called the OEB network coming up. And what we do is we sell the rights to Oracle updates. What we create with this is a market, so people can compete on the Oracle level instead of the essentially blockchain level for updates that have value. And whatever they pay, 90% of that goes to the DApp, and we keep 10%. It's very similar to current MEV solutions like MEV Blocker or MEV Share, we probably heard of, where if you route your transactions through them, they extract all the MEV for you and give you 90% back, and they keep 10. So essentially, this is a solution for dApps that have problems with Oracle value that leaks away. We create a market for that. They get 90% back. We keep 10. And this is something that essentially scales. This is not a zero-sum game. We only make money if we return money, and we grow with the projects. And this is something that we announced 3 weeks ago, roughly. It's its own layer two that acts like it's a ZK rollup that is simply an auction platform. You can buy updates there, and if there are no valuable updates happening, the traditional data feeds are going to update, for instance, every 1%, like they do currently with any other Oracle solution that is out there. But essentially, this auction platform, you can buy additional updates from that might create value, and dApps can essentially save a lot of money utilizing this. If you just look at what something like Aave has paid out over the last 4 years or so, Aave had 2 billion in liquidations, and they had to incentivize that with roughly 100 to 200 million. And just this one dApp alone with the OEB network that we created could potentially recuperate like up to 90% of that value that just bled away for nothing.
So obviously, from a business development perspective, it is about generating business through your lending and borrowing platforms. I mean, is that like, does that extend to individual protocols like Aave, like you said? I mean, is that so? That's essentially where you guys and where you are looking at from a strategic perspective. Conversations with Layer Zero, conversations with those kind of dApps, is that kind of like the gist of what you guys are doing?
Currently mostly focused on lending protocols because the value there is like pretty obvious. An Oracle update creates the potential for a liquidation. So let people compete for that Oracle update and the DApp gets something back. For instance, if you just take, like, let's assume there's a $100,000 position that gets liquidated or is liquidatable, typically lending protocols pay out between 5 to 10% of that value to the liquidator. That means there is 5,000 up to 10,000 up for grabs when that position becomes liquidatable. And if you look at what happens in current block space auctions, the person liquidating is giving up 99% of the value to the block builder in order to be able to extract like 1% of that. So they're fine with like $50 of profit. They're literally giving most of it away, so just so they can get essentially 50%. What this means, or $50. So what this means is that if there's an auction happening on the Oracle layer and the Oracle project, aka us, gives you back 90%, you end up overpaying. You don't pay out 5,000 up to 5 to 10,000 anymore. You actually only end up paying out whatever you couldn't recuperate during the auction. And in the best case scenario, if it acts similar to the block space options, you get back up to 99%.
Awesome. That's really interesting. Have to ask this, how does the business model now apply particularly to Perps DEXs? Because obviously they've got their liquidation engines. They're obviously reliant on Oracles as well. I mean, how are those discussions going and how does that look like? I mean, obviously very similar, but that's almost like, it seems like it's more dynamic and a lot more business there for you guys.
Yeah. So Perp DEXs are mostly relying on pull oracles. So instead of this traditional oracle that automatically updates every 1%, you make users pull the price and every time they open the position. So the user actually pays for the oracle transaction every time. And the same capacity they're currently designed over allowing liquidators to get the most fresh price. But this is the same problem as this traditional push oracles that update every 1%. They update blindly, or they allow anyone to update for free. Like, there's no market behind the pull oracle space, so to speak. And our ORV network can also, in the same fashion, you can tie your liquidation function to our oracle and let users open and close positions with a traditional pull oracle, so that you effectively make people that liquidate compete with each other over this market instead of just allowing anyone to pull for free. Like, in essence, it doesn't matter if it's a push oracle or a pull oracle, you tie your liquidation engine to this auction. And then what we become is an auction for liquidations. So don't allow anyone to just use oracle data for free. Make them compete for that update that has value attached for it.
Interesting. I mean, that really is interesting from a obviously from an efficiency point of view, but also the reliability of the information that you guys are obviously putting out there. So if a business has done a deal with a competitor, are they tied, like from an infrastructure perspective, are they tied into, say, someone like Chainlink on the Oracle side of things in terms of the pricing? Or is it, or can they use what you guys are doing in conjunction with what Chainlink is offering?
I don't know what type of contracts people sign with other people, but we don't care what you use. We never, ever signed exclusivity clauses that, in our opinion, goes against the nature of the space entirely. So if you want to use, for instance, what a lot of perp protocols do, which could be GMX forks, they need like a traditional push oracle and then a pull oracle on top. And we are currently on a lot of chains see people use us for the push part and PIF for the pull part. Like we don't care. We provide you data, use it if you want to. And if other Oracle projects tie you into some shady deal, that's on you. We won't do that. More specifically, like our traditional data feeds, I can just repeat it, just like every other Oracle project, they make no money. So the only thing we care about is you using the OEV network and participating or letting others participate in auctions for valuable updates, because we make new money back and that's how we make money.
Yeah. Amazing. So there's transparency as well as accountability. Well done. I mean, I know that kind of like the decentralized ethos is very much a part of, you know, what you guys hold true to yourselves. I mean, I picked that up in the docs, spoken to a couple of people, and it's obviously a big part of it. Just looking at, you know, the decentralized aspect of it, the DAO that is kind of like the API3, that is in itself kind of like the vehicle that you guys want to use. And then there's obviously the token. Can you just like kind of bring it all together for us in terms of like the perspective that you guys have and, you know, the function of the token and how you guys want to move through the markets going forward?
Yeah. So the token itself is a governance token. So you can acquire it and stake it to participate in governance. That gives you, if you reach certain thresholds, I mean, obviously it gives you the right to vote in any capacity. And after reaching certain thresholds, you can also create proposals, make proposals, whatnot. And the core proposition of why it is a DAO to begin with also goes back to the Chainlink days. So essentially, data feeds are controlled by some type of entity. Typically, they're not static because providers drop out, new providers come in, they underperform. So data feeds in itself are an ever-changing construct. And so far, a lot of projects have a centralized entity behind it managing it. For Chainlink, it's Chainlink Labs. And for us, it resides with a certain team, but that team proposal needs to pass. And if it doesn't pass anymore, we give the rights back and so on. So actually, if somebody acquires enough rights and creates a proposal, they can say that we do a pretty damn bad job at managing these data feeds. They would like the rights to manage this, and we'd have to, according to DAO, essentially hand those over. And be relieved of our duties of operating this, which is not the case with anything else. And obviously, people are going to argue token distribution, is it really centralized, and so on. But at the end of the day, the possibility is there, whereas with everything else, it's fixed. There is no way in hell you're going to get the rights away from Chainlink Labs ever to manage these data feeds. So yeah, that is essentially the gist of it. Theoretically, not only theoretically, like, we have to pass proposals to operate these. If we don't get money, if we don't get extended rights to operate these, we cannot operate these. The DAO has to approve this, and that's how we go about it. And when it comes to the, I think you also asked for the token, essentially, it's just a governance vehicle, and whatever profits we make out of the OEB business are going to be funneled into token buyback and burns. That is anchored into the white paper already and is already developed. We just essentially are currently waiting for the launch of the OEB network.
So when are you guys anticipating on the OEB network being launched? That's something that you guys are actively busy with at the moment, right?
Yeah, so in Denver, there's ETH Denver coming up, starting next Friday. There's going to be hackathon challenges. Like, we announced it roughly 3 weeks ago, the testnet being live. There's going to be hackathon challenges where people will be asked to build search reports and compete at auctions. And the most performant teams can win prizes. And we expect the OEB network to go live very shortly after Denver.
Cool. That's pretty exciting. Good luck with that. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. In terms of socials and the rest of it, where can people find you guys? Discord, Twitter?
Yeah, the usual Discord. We prefer Discord. So Discord, Twitter, there's a Telegram channel on our website. You can contact us. There's a forum if you want to suggest anything. You can also catch us at events. We're going to be in Denver next. After that, potentially in Zurich. There's ETH Zurich there. ETHCC coming up. All of the major things. So just hop by our booths. Talk to us. Reach out over Twitter. Yeah.
Great. Are you guys going to be at Token 2049 in Singapore?
Not in a booth presence, but there's going to be 4 to 5 team members there.
Great. Thank you, sir, for joining us. It's been interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's not often that we get to chat about, you know, the nuts and bolts of how DeFi like works, and that's what you guys are doing. And yeah, really, thanks for your time and the opportunity to chat with you. And yeah, we look forward to seeing how you guys grow in the space. I think competition is needed and healthy, and yeah, I think it's just better for the industry. And yeah, good luck out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.